So we have a discussion here in the Braisa. Tana Rabbana. Ner Chanukah mitzvah anicha al Pesach beiso mibachutz. Ima yadar ba'aliyah manicha b'chalon. The chalon which is smukh or shisa rabbi. Ubishasa sakana manicha al shulchano v'dayo. So the Braisa tells us that b'shas sakana, you put it on your shulchan v'dayo, and that's enough. You put it on your shulchan, and that's where we put the that's enough. So what does it mean b'shasa sakana? So if you take a look at Rashi says shehayu lahem leparsiim chok biyom edom shlo yaviru ner el mebeis avodah zarah shelahem kedarmina begitin. So Rashi tells us sakana in the Gemara is a very very specific sakana, seemingly. Or at least that's what the Braisa was referring to. In the times of the Gemara, so the Goyim who were living in Paras at the time, were in the area of Babel at the time, were Persians. In Babel were Persians. They had conquered the Babylonian region. And this the Gemara refers to as the Chavroi. They were fire worshippers. They were Zoroastrians, and they worshipped fire. And apparently they had certain days of the year where no one was allowed to light a fire. They could only light a fire in their base of Avodah Zarah, in their temples, in their fire temples. And therefore it was considered sakanas nefashos. Maybe even they would kill you, incarcerate you, kill you, if you lit a fire in your house. Everyone had to leave. There were no lights were allowed to be on in private homes. So says, according to Rashi, what's the Braisa saying? Ubishas sakana. And at the time of the sakana, where it's there's a problem to light candles, so you put it al shulchan ovidayo. Tosus asks, "Hey, wait a second! But maybe they're going to send the fire police, and they're going to knock on your door, and they're going to look in the door, and they're going to see you lighting it inside your house on the table. So that we don't have to be choshish for that. That they didn't do. They didn't go around and check houses, but they went up and down the streets to see if anybody had lights lit outside of their house. That's how Rashi explains. And again, Rashi explains." Very specific sakana. Now, there's no reason to think that if there would be a similar sakana, Rashi wouldn't agree, but Rashi definitely doesn't say in a broad sense, the goyim don't allow you to do mitzvos. They actually, it sounds like they don't even care about the mitzvos. This is not against the Jewish religion. This is, they have this hang-up about candles, because they're fire worshippers. They could care less if we were doing it for religious reasons or not religious reasons. That's interesting, that the sakana here is not specifically persecution against Jews. But seemingly there would be no reason to think that Rashi wouldn't extend it to that situation. Okay, that's Rashi. Now, according to Rashi, it sounds like it's really like sakana stafasha, that they're going to kill you. I mean, again, Rashi doesn't say that. But if that's what Rashi means, so then what's the chiddush here? It's pashut, you don't have to do the mitzvah if it's sakana stafasha. Now you're telling me, David, wait a second, but didn't we learn the sugya in Sanhedrin on Daf Ayin Dalid that said, what did the sugya in Sanhedrin say? Right? The Gemara said that normally they're the big three that you give to give your life for. Gilirayash, Shvichos Damim, and Avodah Zarah. But the Gemara said that Bishas Hashmad, even a mitzvah kala. Shar mitzvahs you have to give your life on. So what's the pshat here? So you're right. If you learn like Rashi, it's not shmad. You learn like Rashi. And they don't want fire. Nothing to do with religion. They could care less why we're lighting our candles. It's not shmad according to Rashi. But assuming that Rashi doesn't limit it just this case where the Zoroastrians don't want people lighting fire. Also in the shas shmad. So isn't it pashat I don't have to do mitzvah? You'll remember we learned the shita of the Ran. The Ran was commenting on the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Mem Tes. That Elisha Baal Kenafayim. How could it be that he had his tefillin on and when the Roman officer came over to him, he quickly hid his tefillin? You have to give your life even for Shar Mitzvos if it's Shas HaShmad. So what did the Ran learn from there? Who remembers the Shitas HaRan? And we had a whole discussion if the Rambam agrees or not?
Not for
Mitzvos HaSeh. Then we asked, well then how did he put it on in the first place? And we said, Midos Chasidus. But the first step is that that whole sugya that you have to give your life for Shar Mitzvos, that means Shar Mitzvos lo sase. You never have to give your life for a mitzvah sase. Someone puts a gun to your head, even B'shas HaShmad, and says, don't make kiddush or I'll kill you. You don't have to sit there and make kiddush and get killed. Oh, but it's shas hashmad. Doesn't matter. Not for mitzvah sasa. It's only for mitzvah lo sasa. Okay. So, what's the kiddush there? Of course you don't have to light your candles if the goyimer made a gzera shmad against lighting candles. What was the habamina? Maybe, according to that, the chiddush is that you have to light it at all, even on the table. Maybe you have to be machmir for sakonas nefashos. You can't even light it on the table. Maybe that's part of what Tosus is coming from. When Tosus is asking, hey, why do you light it at all? And Tosus says, yeah, but you do it on the table, they're not going to check on the table. Okay, be that as it may, that's Rashi's interpretation. If you looked in the Ritva starts off and addresses everything that we just said. The Ritva says, obviously we don't mean that it's sakonas nefashos. You wouldn't have to give your life for sakonas nefashos. It wouldn't have even been a habami that you light candles in that situation. Rather, it's not that they're going to kill you, but it's going to cause, it's bad news for the Jews if you light your candles outside your house. Why? They're going to be mitzayer. You know, they're going to start throwing things. They're going to make fun of us. It's going to cause Ava. What's Ava mean?
Enmity.
Ava means hatred, but it means, you know, negative feelings towards the Jews. No one's going to come and kill you. But if you have candles outside your house, it's going to cause, you know, communal... they're going to be disgruntled in the community. You know, like sometimes I know where I grew up, there was always an issue about Jews walking in the middle of the street on Shabbos. And the guy would get very upset, you know, why are you being so inconsiderate? You know, it's not Shabbos for everyone. What are you walking in the middle of the streets for? Which I hear, that makes a lot of sense, that time. So, if it's going to cause negative feelings, now, we have to always ask the question, well, what does it mean it's going to cause negative feelings? There's some anti-Semite on my block that anything I do, like every time I walk out of my house, with a kippah on, he gets upset. So you have to define what exactly, when it reaches the point of Ava. Just because there's an anti-Semite, or even worse sometimes, there's a non-religious Jew who's like a self-hating Jew, and he gets upset anytime anybody walks outside with a kippah on their head, that's not enough to create Ava. So you have to define what it means. But that's what the Ritva writes. The Ritva writes that if there's Ava, there's Tsar, that's a kind of nefashos, but Tsar, then you don't light outside. That's what it means, Mishas Sakana. So the Ritva's learning sakana in a little bit of a less meduyuk fashion. Sakana doesn't mean it's actually a danger. It means that it's not so pashuk to light outside. It's sakana in a general sense. You know, it's not good for the longevity of the community that we light outside. But it's not an acute, I think that would be the right word. It's not an acute sakana. As opposed to Rashi. For Rashi, it's an acute sakana. We saw one other perush, and that was in the Shul of the Rivash. The Rivash was a Talmud of the Ran. So the Rivash writes that, and he's dealing with a different issue. He has a tshuva where he's dealing with trying to justify the fact that they would light candles in the shul and make a bracha, which we do. We light candles in the shul and we make a bracha. So he's trying to justify that minhag, because that's not the mitzvah. How can you make a bracha on that? So the Rivash writes that maybe part of the reason we're doing it, and the reason we can even like fetch out a bracha, is because we're really lacking in the Iker mitzvah of pursuing Nisa, because we light indoors. And why do we light out indoors? So says the Rivash, because the Yad Akum is Takifa Aleinu, which sounds like we are at the whim of a foreign authority, a foreign power. And his Lashon is Ein Anu Yecholim. We're not able to light outside. So I don't know exactly what that means. Does that mean that there was like a law you can't light outside? Or does it just mean it's not comfortable to light outside? He doesn't tell us exactly, but again, the hadar he gives is that we are yad akum tkifa alin normally means that we're living under a foreign authority. We're not living under our own authority in Eretz Yisrael. We're living under a foreign authority. Or we don't have autonomy. We don't have autonomy, and therefore that precludes us from being able to light outside. Once you see the different shittas in sakana, we're able to now turn to the very practical question, which is, so nowadays, should we be lighting outside? Now, when I say nowadays, I don't mean here in Eretz Yisrael. Here in Eretz Yisrael, the minhag has been and always has been to light outside. But what about in Chutz Laaretz? Okay? Most of the people in the room here live in the United States. Those who live in England, I imagine it's a similar reality. Most of us in Chutz Laaretz live in very Jewish communities. Now, not everybody, but many of us live in areas that are very, very Jewish, and perhaps even many of the blocks, houses, or not all the houses on your block, are Jewish, maybe even Orthodox. So, again, it's not one size fits all. I imagine, right, in Cleveland, you probably have non-Jews on your block, right?
Some, yeah.
Some.
Depends on where you live.
But, yeah. Depends on where you live. Okay, I can tell you that where I grew up, when I was growing up as a kid, we only had one other from family on our block. We had one other from family. We had a lot of Gentiles. We had a few angry, not religious Jews who were not so happy about the Jews being religious. But there was only one other from family on my block out of like 12 or 13 houses. Now, this is back at my parents' house. I think maybe there's one non-Jew left on the block. I think maybe one. And basically everyone on the block is from to a degree. Everyone is observant to some degree. I think some are conservative, but everybody, nobody is like absolutely not religious at all or anti. Everyone is goes to a shul and a synagogue and is religious to a degree. So can my parents really make the argument that on our street in Teaneck, which is almost like a dead-end street, it's like a one-way at the end, it's basically a dead-end street, it's a sakana for us to light outside of our house? So, you know, let's go back through the Rishonim for a second. If you learn like Rashi, that it's like a sakanas nefoshos, almost, or it's really sakana, well, it's going to be hard to build a case that in Teaneck, New Jersey, in Hendon, in Edgewood, I don't know what Edgewood is like, are there a lot of the houses Jewish? Yeah. Can you build the case that it's a sakana to light candles outside your house, that they're going to start like, you know, God forbid, like, you know, the Nuremberg laws, and they're going to start because people are lighting outside of their house. There's going to be persecution. Montoya Circle, it's hard to make an argument like that, that if you light outside, there's a sakana. Maybe if you learn, like, the Ritva, there's what to talk about. Yeah, there'll be negative feelings, people will be upset, it'll rustle people's feathers. We don't have to show off our Judaism, you know, and shove it in everyone else's face. No, it's hard to argue. Certainly, you live in like Teaneck, you live in the five towns. Like, and every block you go on, there's a shul, there's kosher restaurants, there's, you know, I don't know exactly what goes on, but when there's a Kosa Sefer Torah, we definitely are very public about our Judaism. So if we light a little box outside of our house, that's going to cause a problem. You know, there's pumpkins on some people's doors, and some people have like the nativity scene, or whatever I think it's called, outside their house. You know, so it's going to be such a big deal if we light a little candle outside of our house, obviously if it's done in a safe way. So you have to really understand, even according to the Rivash, so Yad Akum Takifa Leinu, okay, maybe, yes, I guess we're technically, but Ein Anu Yecholim, we're not allowed to? I don't know, it's a free country. I can't light a candle on my front porch. So before we get into how we see how the Rishonim address, let me just raise one or two just lumdish questions in terms of looking at the Braisa that we read. Just also raise questions about the feasibility, or even if we should be advocating lighting outside. The lashon of the Braisa was ubishasa sakana manicha al shulchano vidayo. So what does that lashon mean? Vidayo, it's enough. So what do you mean it's enough? Does that mean it's enough to be mekayim the mitzvah? You can be mekayim the. It's okay. You're mekayim the mitzvah legamre bishasa sakana. All right. So we'll have to be mevater on the Pirsumei Nisa, Vidayo, and it's enough halachically to light inside. Is that what Vidayo means? Or does Vidayo mean it's enough to squeak by? You know, your yokes ain't vidyevet. You know, you ask the rabbi, and the rabbi says, yes, it's okay. Yeah, it's okay. That's okay. It's not lechachila. It's not the right way to do it. So that's one question. So in terms of this word dayo, what is Vidayo suggesting? Is it suggesting, no, this is enough. This is good. Or it barely makes the grade. The other question I would raise is, I know it says ubishas hasakana, but the question is, once the shas sakana came, right? Rashi is the one who frames this very historically. Why does Rashi do that? It's a strange thing to say. Just say whenever there's a sakana. What does he have to give us an example for? That example, Rashi knew. Rashi's living in France 1,000 years later. He knows that that's not the Metzias anymore. And yet Rashi's lighting indoors. So why is Rashi pinning it to a specific time period? Maybe Rashi's trying to tell us, and some Achronim learned like this, that once Shas Takana came, Chazal came and made a different Takana. They said, it's no longer the mitzvah to light outdoors. Once that sakana came, Chazal came and said, no, now you light indoors. And maybe Rashi is purposely historically putting it into the historical context because Rashi's trying to explain why in France am I still lighting indoors? You know why? Because Misha Sakana, I know the Gemara says Bisha Sakana. Misha Sakana, you do it on the Shulchan and that's enough. That's the mitzvah now. Chazal actually made a takana. So this is a very interesting question now. How do we look at it? Is it that Bisha Sakana, we're doing it second rate because we have no choice? Or is it that from that time of that Sakana, Chazal realized that, you know what, better to do this mitzvah inside. And that's certainly going to impact what happens now going forward. Now going forward, and you have to know, this is not just a question today. For many different tkufos in history, Jews lived, often in many European cities, Jews lived in ghettos. They didn't live amongst the goyim. They lived in their own little quarter. Certainly when they lived in shtetlach, so in many shtetlach, there were only Jews, and if there weren't only Jews, there were 60-70% Jews, and they lived. There were Jewish blocks. So what was exactly the concern? Why wouldn't we see a more mass lighting outside? Maybe dafka because Chazal came and they switched the nature of the takana. Okay, I know there were one or two questions. Let me just speak for a few more minutes and I'll take the questions. Now, I think if you read the Rivash carefully, you could maybe make a deal. I already brought attention to the words. The Rivash said, "Ein anu yicholim." There's a little bit of a deal there that maybe if we could, we would. The Rivash says, listen, nowadays, you know why we light in shul, we make a bracha? Because we just can't light outside. What do you mean we can't light outside? Why doesn't he say, because now the mitzvah is inside. The mitzvah is inside now, because I'll change things. And that's what we're trying to say pshat and Rashi, that Rashi maybe learned that they changed the nature of the takana. Now you light inside. But the Rivash doesn't say that. The Rivash says, listen, we're not able to. Okay, so what if you are able to? Maybe there's some room in the Rivash to say that. Taka, if you can, you should. You could even maybe argue this based on the riff and the rush and the tour. If you look in the riff, the rush, the tour, I don't think I gave it to you on the Makar. Did I give it to you on the Makar sheet? The riff, the rush, and the tour? So if you look in the riff and the rush and the tour, you don't have to read it inside because I can just tell it to you. It says just what the Braisa says. It just says, Ner Chanukah, Mitzvah Anicha al Pesach Beiso, Ubisha Sakana, Anicha al Shulchan Bedaya. I don't know. To me, just quoting the Braisa is an argument that nowadays you should light outside. Why? Because the lashon of the Braisa is light outside. If there's a shas sakana, then don't. Okay, so then I would think, meaning, why didn't the Rif or the Rosh write, V'ha'idna anachnu madlikim bifnim? He doesn't say that. He just says, light outside, but if it's a shas sakana, light inside. Okay, great. So each door, you have to look at where you live, and you have to say to yourself, Am I in a shas sakana or am I not b'shas sakana? Oh, I live in Teaneck in 2022. That's not shas sakana. I can light outside. So there is a little bit of a mashmos just from the riff, the rush, the way they just quoted kipashta the lishna. And indeed, I think you saw the rush.
The rush is there. Nearer to the Ridach, I don't want to keep near.
Yeah.
Because he's talking about a different context.
But when he quotes the Braisa, he just quotes it without any qualifications on the Braisa. Now the Orzarua, you took a look, the Orzarua, who's living in the times of the Rishonim in Germany, so Austria, so the Orzarua just says, yeah, I actually don't really know why we light inside. Meaning that's the Minog.
Hold on a second.
That's the Minog. The Idna, the Lake of Sakana, right, most Rishonim, the Idna, that we light inside. The Idna, the Lake of Sakana, Moyodana, my time, I don't understand why we don't light outside. I don't understand why we don't light in our chatzer. So, it's not, coming up with this like newfangled idea for generations, Jews lit. It's true, for generations, Jews lit indoors. But you see, the Orzarua himself is not 100% comfortable with it. Now, it's mashma that he continued to light indoors. Right? He didn't say, that's it, I'm putting my foot down. I'm paskening. He was the gadol ador, the Orzarua. He was huge, the Orzarua. He was the Rav in Vienna. All the shayos and tshuvas came to him. But you see that the Orzarua, he didn't change the psak. One place where we do find it is in the Itter. The Itter was a contemporary of Rabbeinu Tam, so this is before the Orzarua. He's a contemporary of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri are living in northern France. The Itter is in southern France. And the Itter, Rav Abba Mari, Rav Yitzchak ben Abba Mari of Marseille. So the Itter, he writes that, I think that's where he's from. So he writes that nowadays, if you're able to, you should light outdoors. You have to look around. You have to see where you live. If you live in a place where you can light outdoors. So it sounds like, according to the internet, that maybe in Provence they were lighting outdoors. You know, it might depend where you're living. If you're living in an area that you're able to, it happens to be, I think, today, Provence is that's like the area of France, which is very Muslimized. Islamized, I forgot what the exact term is. That area, it's amazing. That was such a Jewish area, that whole area of Provence. Those cities like Lunel and Marseille, those were big, big Jewish cities. Now I think it's like second us nefashos to go into those cities. But those are the areas of France that are like, you know, Sharia law, if I am correct. But it sounds like the Itter in their time period was safe. And the Itter said, light outside. That's what the din is. Why would you light indoors? Now, is there any other way, if we're looking at the sugya, and we're arguing that nowadays there should be good reason to light indoors, so why didn't that happen? How come in all these communities in Europe they didn't light indoors? How come those of us who live in America and England, where we're coming, even England is Western Europe, coming from the communities, you know, most people who live in England, their family's only a few generations in England. They haven't been there for 10 generations. They came from Eastern Europe, they came from Germany. So how come in these communities in Germany and in Eastern Europe, how come they weren't lighting outdoors? So we see other Rishonim and Achronim giving other suggestions of why we won't light outdoors. Number one, the Kolbo. Kolbo is a Rishon, very end of the period of the Rishonim. He's also, I believe, in Provence. And the Kolbo writes that we're concerned that the guy are going to put out the candles. Is that, why that's the biggest concern. He did the mitzvah, I'm not going to say mitzvah, he did the mitzvah. If the guy can come and put it out, unless he's going to argue that we know that, and we're going to talk about this in a few minutes, you can't light the candles in a location where you know they're going to go out. If it's very windy, you can't like stand there, block it for a second, light your candle, and then go up. And then, you know, the wind blows it out and go, oh, I was going to the mitzvah, I'm going to the mitzvah. You have to light it in a place where it's roy that it can last. So if you live in a place where the goyim are going to blow it out and it's not going to be able to light, so maybe the you can't really light there. That's not a makom that you're able to light.
Isn't that the Gemara according to Rashi? According to Rashi, what's the sakana?
I thought they were going to hurt you. I thought they were
going to
kill you. They made a law.
Rashi quotes the Gemara in Gittin. The Gemara in Gittin, there's three of them chilling in the house. And some Chaldean walks in, sees a candle, blows it, and walks out. Like
You want to say that the chash was just that they...
Sakana to the candle. Meaning it's not going to last. And that's why the Ritzvah, when he brings it, says, Lufichach, Omer, Mori, if the candles are going to blow out, you can also light inside.
Rav Hutton and I spent a lot of time just trying to figure out what that lefikach is. Is the lefikach trying to say that this is also considered din sakana? Or is the lefikach saying that now that you see that you're able to light inside, meaning it's also a mitzvah to light inside, so lefikach, now we have to live in a place where it's very windy, you're able to light inside. It's a little bit of a discussion. So that's interesting. Rashi here... You want to say that maybe the sakana just means that Tosfos quotes the one that hey. There's also a Gemara in Mem Hey about the Chavroi. And Tosfos quotes from there. Yeah. Mahu letzoltule shraget the Chanukasa. Mikame chavroi b'shapsu. Are you allowed to move a candle? Now this doesn't sound like the way you're saying it, but again, Rashi has quoted this Gemara. But shraga, the question in the Gemara here is in Shabbos. Let's say you lit Hanukkah candles, and they went in your house. I imagine because it's shasa sakana, and the candle went out, and now there's chavroi that are coming into your house, and you're nervous. Because you don't want them to see that you lit a candle. So you let them move it on Shabbos. Because you know the Shabbos candles, after they go out, they're muksa. I mean, when they're lit, they're also muksa. But the Shabbos candle, even after it goes out, the Shabbos candle is muksa. So he says, can you move it? Mikami chavroi shlo yiru b'chotzer, he says. V'him gozru shlo lahadlik. Inem of yom edom en manichem lidlo kor ela v'beis avodazara. So he actually quotes here Rashi. I'm quoting from Rashi here. Rashi here quotes two different versions of what the Chavroi did, these Zoroastrians. Did they make a gezeirah that you're not allowed to light Hanukkah candles? That sounds like Shema. Or did they have a holiday where no one else is allowed to light. I immediately assumed that when I was reading Rashi by us. And I think maybe someone pointed out that, well, that means that Hanukkah has to happen to fall out exactly at the time that they had this holiday. Is that you who said that? Somebody said to me, or I maybe I overheard someone saying to somebody else, that, you know, just because they had this holiday, but it always fell out of Hanukkah time? But, you know, here the candle's already out. Like, what are you nervous about? So, first of all, it sounds like from Rashi that there are two versions of what the Sakana was. Either it was, or what was bothering the Goyim. Was it the fact that we were doing a mitzvah, and then it's really Shemad? Or was it the fact that they had a holiday that no one else is allowed to light candles except for them, in their temples? Now, from here, at least from the Gemara here, it is mashma a little bit that there was a concern, because the candle's out already. Like, it's not just that they're going to put it out. Okay, be that as it may, the Kolbo, going back, we're trying to figure out, are there other reasons why you might not light outside? Because if it's really just because of Sakana, it's hard case to make today that it's a Shas Sakana today. So the Kolbo said, yeah, maybe living in a place where the Goyim will throw it out. You know, I don't know, you know, if you live in Germany, in Manhattan, I imagine if you light your candles in the front of your building, so there's a good chance that someone's going to knock them over, kick them over, blow them out, steal your menorah. You know, you can't light in the middle of Manhattan and leave it outside the building, right? So, I don't know, I guess it depends. Every location, depending on where you are, if anyone would give you problems. The Aruch HaShulchan has a very interesting suggestion. It's not interesting in the sense that it's so unique, but it generates an interesting discussion. And that is that the Aruch HaShulchan says, you know why we don't light candles outdoors nowadays? Because of the rain, and because of the cold, and because of the winds. And someone asked me, well, what? There was no rain and there was no wind in the time of the Gemara? And they answered, well, Eretz Yisrael is very different. It's amazing. What's today? December 1st? And you'll go for a walk outside. I know Aryeh and Benny are thinking, what's a chiddush of having nice weather December 1st, right? L.A. has nice weather all year. But where most of us are from, this is not, you know, Chicago, it's not, this is not the weather December 1st, correct?
It's probably like 3 feet of snow,
right? What was that?
It's probably
3 feet of snow, exactly. So, in Hanami, when the Mishnah was written in Eretz Yisrael, so you see, the Mitzvah of Hanukkah, the Institute of Yitz would say, you see, the Mitzvah of Hanukkah was instituted to be done in Eretz Yisrael, you're supposed to be in Eretz Yisrael. Now you see, that's how they instituted the Mitzvah. But in Chutzlar, okay, in Chutzlar, no, you could do it in Syria, you could do it in Lebanon, a lot of places you can do it. So, in Los Angeles, So says the Aruch HaShulchan is living in Germany, and in Germany it's nice and cold right now. So the Aruch HaShulchan says it's rainy, you can't light candles outside. Oh, and you're going to tell me you should get a glass box in order to protect it? That's a big tircha. No one's requiring you to go out and buy a glass box. Now, why is that such a big tircha? It's cheaper than a mesrog. What, you know, is it expensive? Is that the issue? What's the problem with buying a glass box? So you have to go out and get a glass box. I don't know, maybe before the Industrial Revolution, when you lived after the Industrial Revolution, it's hard. You have to go to a glassmith, a glassmaker, and he's going to make glass for you. I don't know exactly what the big tircha is. But this idea of the Aruch HaShulchan is already in the Rishonim, as Rav Yitz made reference to a minute ago. The Ritva makes reference to the fact that where he lived as well. Now, he lived in southern Spain. I think the weather in southern Spain is pretty nice at this time of year. But he writes also that his father, I think he quotes it from, that it was very rainy during the times of Hanukkah. So, in the Shilas and Shuvas of the Yavetz, now the Yavetz is also living in Germany. This is what Yaakov Emden. He's the son of the Chacham Tzvi. His father was the Rav in major German city, but he didn't get that job. He looked for some other jobs. He has an interesting life. But Rav Yaakov Emden, he writes that for sure he thinks you should go out and get a glass box. And he even has all these reasons why a glass box will be better, and that's the ideal way to do it. And if he didn't see that everybody was doing this, he would make a takana, everyone should get a glass box. And sounds like light outside. You know, it sounds like he's on board for lighting outside with a glass box. Now, there is a very interesting discussion about the glass boxes. This is the Ritzi Pesach Frank quotes this. And this is, let's say it's very windy. So what are you going to do? You're going to open the box, and you're going to try to light your candle, but the wind's going to keep coming in and blowing out your box. So you'll put your back to block, and then as soon as you light it, you'll quickly close the door. So he quotes, I think, from the Mario Tiskin, he quotes from someone, that one of the Gedolei Yushalayim, that, l'chor, you're not Yotze like that. Because b'shas hadlaka, right? Hadlaka osa mitzvah. It's the moment of lighting, which is the question where we determine where you Yotze the mitzvah. When you lit with the door open, so it was exposed to the wind, it cannot remain lit with the door open. Very nice that you close the door afterwards. So that's like kanocha. You lit it in a place where it's not good, and then you placed it in a place. Now, you didn't place it by moving the menorah, but by closing the door, you put it in a place where it's able to burn for 30 minutes. But b'shas hadlaka, it couldn't last. So if you'll see, there's really fancy boxes that have a hole in them. There's a little hole in the glass on the top. You check your box and see if you have it. I'm not saying that you have to be machmir face. I'm just giving you the information behind the sukkah. So the reason why they started making with a little hole is that way you can close the door and you can light through the hole. There's like a little hole from the top. You can light, and the wind doesn't get in through that hole because it's like a little hole in the top. So it's just enough to get your candle in so that you can light.
Your Rebbe said that he used to make some like contraption. And he said like the halacha says be normal.
Right. Oh, okay. But he needed a way to get it in,
yeah.
Like some Rube Goldberg machine that he can like get it in and the door can close. Okay. So, Lamaisa, that's a little bit of the discussion, and maybe it's because of some of these other reasons: the winds, the goyim are going to blow it out. These are reasons why people don't light outside. The question is, how do we get to the window then? If you open the Gemara, you read the Braisa. The Braisa says, "B'shas sakani, put on your shulchan." So in America, everybody lights by their window. So you can choose. Either light outside or light on your shulchan. Why are you lighting by the window? Now, a lot of times you say, what's the big deal? We put it on a table by the window. So we like it to be by the window. But let's say you don't have that. Like in my house, and I'm always figuring out where the right place to light, Rav Hutt pointed out to me, maybe Rav Hutt knows my house better than I do, Rav Hutt pointed out to me that I actually do have a window that faces the public because we have two bedrooms that have a tiny little window. It's a very, very thin window because it's the front of the building, so we don't want a big window. It's a little window, like, on top, like you might have, like, in a basement. There's a little window, and he said, you could put it up there, and then people can see. But that's in our guest bedroom. So, like, it's a little funny, like, the whole family's going to go up to the guest bedroom, we're light, then we go downstairs. Okay, if that's the luck, we'll do it. So, but where does this come from, where you light at the window? The minute is to light at the window. So if Moshe writes that we have to realize, and maybe it's a little bit on the background of this sugi that we're learning. Maybe we all realize that we really should be on some level lighting outside. We don't. Why don't we? That was the minog. It's cold outside. So what's now? It's all or nothing. So now that we're not lighting outside, so we're going to light in our dungeon in our basement, and nobody can see. So it sounds like in Ramosha's Truba that we're trying to sort of work out some type of healthy compromise. On the one hand, we're not lighting outside, but there's a good reason to light outside. So at least light by the window so you can chop the presume nisa. But that's where Moshe writes. He writes that he prefers personally to light by the window. And it's not really a sakana, so it's not a problem to show that you're Jewish. It's not really a sakana. There's reasons not to light outside. The wind, someone will blow it out. But putting it by your window, so therefore you're able to also yotzei the presume nisa. So let's say someone here walks out of shir, says, okay, I decided I'm lighting outside from now on. I think I asked. Usually every year there's at least one guy, but I think nobody raised their hand that their family lights outside in Chutz Laretz. So let's say you say, I'd like to light outside. I want to start lighting out. I learned the sukkah. There's no, I live, my whole block is from. I have no concern. We have one of those doorbell cameras anyway, so I'll be sitting there watching to see if anybody comes near my candles. I'm going to light outside. So this question was asked of Sternbuch when he was a Rav in South Africa. So he thought that we shouldn't change the minhag, which is very much l'shita. So he brings as an example, he says that the reason why we blow shofar during Musaf is because there was a concern the Goyim used to come to check. They didn't want us to blow shofar. So they would come to shul to check, and once they saw that we started Musaf, they said, oh, that's it. They're scared of us. They're not blowing shofar. So we started blowing shofar in Musaf. That was why we started blowing shofar in Musaf. Okay, so nowadays, why do we continue to blow shofar in Musaf? Nobody's scared that the Goyim are going to stop us. He said that once, you see that once certain minhagim in terms of how we do certain rituals are set into place, so we don't start switching them. Others will argue, and I think the Brisker Rav writes like this, the longest that we said, he doesn't say it in Rashi, I don't think, but this idea that the Chazal made a takana, they changed the takana, they said, now you light inside. And in the places where they made such a takana, now I know they didn't make such a takana in Tinek, but if they made such a takana in Chutz Laretz, that we're lighting outside, so again, you have to be done and figure out, do they actually make such a takana? But he suggests that that's maybe the reason why people continue to light outside, inside. There's a little bit of a question also, just to, we'll bring it up. It's a broader discussion, but it's something that we should be sensitive to. And that's the question of Yuara. If the minog in your town is not to light outside, and you're going to be super frum and light outside, and then of course when someone comes over to you and they say, why are you lighting outside? You're going to go, you have to start with that, to be yotzei to Yuara. You're going to say, it's Gemara and Shabbos. It's Brisa. What do you mean? Why aren't you lighting outside? What, Shas Sakana? So you have to be very careful about Yuara, and if we're doing something, so sometimes people like to be counterculture, and you know, it drives their identity a little bit, and it gets dangerous when you do that in halacha. That there's one way that everybody does things, and you have to go out of your way, and it's a fine line because we also want to do things right. You know, like let's say the proper pronunciation of tefillah. So everyone pronounces the word one way, and it's not really the right way to pronounce it. And there's always one guy in shul who like is very loud, and he, you know, I remember once I davened from the Almud, and I apparently pronounced the word incorrectly. So a man came over to me after davening, and he said, you know, by the way, I just want to let you know the proper way to pronounce that word is like this. You know, I think it was in I'll pass it along. I think it was in Hallel. I was saying Eloha, and thank you, Rabbi Yitz. And a guy came over to me in shul. I davened from the Almud in shul. I don't know, I was like in 11th grade or something. I davened from the Almud. I said Eloha. And the guy came over to me and he said, it's Eloah. Not Eloha, it's Eloah. I said, oh, okay, thank you very much. So there's a very difference than a guy standing, you know, in shul and like really, really loudly, like making a real statement, trying to. So on the one hand, I understand where it's coming from. He's trying to correct people. He's trying to help people pronounce things correctly. It gets to a point of URL, which means you know, showing off or a lack of modesty or haughtiness. So we have to be careful about that. And that might be something that would come up regarding this. If everyone in your community is doing something one way, so again, what if everyone in the community is doing something and it's just totally wrong? So is it wrong? You know, like I'm fasting on Tisha B'Av and everyone's breaking. That's not URL. It's obvious that's not URL. So you have to figure out exactly how to define when it would be URL and when it wouldn't be. One last point just in terms of placement of the menorah, and that's the question of above 10 tefachim and below 10 tefachim. So the Gemara brings up a possibility that maybe mitzvah l'anicha b'soch asara. Now I want to make it clear, this is not a brisa. This is Rava making the right word in English. He's not deducing it, he's inferring it from a psak and a braisa. Amar Ravina mishum de Rabba, zoso meres, we see from here, ner chanak a mitzvah anicha besoch asar. So they need to put it besoch asar tzvachim, lower than 10 tzvachim. Now you right away will say, oh, well, we're passing that way, we're passing that way. Look, there's a little letter there. But if you look in the Amish Baner Mitzvah, you'll see that Amish Baner Mitzvah only quotes the Torah, he doesn't quote the Rambam. The Rambam never quotes this, the halacha. The Rif also doesn't quote it. They leave it out. So, seemingly they're passing that there is no inyan to light the menorah under 10 tefachim. However, in the Shulchan Aruch does bring it down lahalacha. In Tafresh Ayin Aleph Vav, the Shulchan Aruch brings that it's lichachila to mitzvah lahadlik, to be madlik it lamata me'asara. The Shabura tells us, though, that certainly b'di'evit you're still yotze if you don't do that. And a little bit of the question that emerges is, I think there are reasons al pisod, which I obviously don't understand, but there are reasons al pisod of why to light it under asara. But on a halachic realm, there's a question about if it's more nicker that you're lighting for the mitzvah when you light below 10. Now, why would that be? We don't live in a society or culture where we use candlelight, so we wouldn't know. But I can tell you from, I think I told you that my power went out on Rosh Hashanah and we had 2 days of darkness, but we were able to light candles because we're allowed to light candles on Yom Tov, so from a pre-existing flame. So we learned very quickly that when you put candles up high, so it sheds much more light. When you put candles low, it doesn't shed as much light. So in general, in homes, they would light the candles high. They would put the candles up high and it would light up the room. So lighting lower down is clearly not for light, and it's in order to be mekayem the mitzvah. The Meiri says that not only do we not paskin like this, maybe it's even better to light it up high. because it's greater pursuing east. The light can be seen from further when you light up high. So, interesting discussion. If you're able to light below 10, so you might as well. Shulchan Aruch says that's the ideal way to do it. But it's certainly not ma'akev in the kima mitzvah. Okay. I want to just get started. I know we have a couple more minutes. I'm not